When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome to the show. Britain's top 10 pies have been revealed. This is my favourite top 10 ever. It's going to make me immediately ravenous. Mm-hmm. Number 10, the Melton Mowbray pork pie. Number 9, the meat and potato pie. Number 8, the pot pie. Number 7, the pasty. Not a pie, it's a pasty. Number 6, pie and mash. That's not a pie, it's just a pie with mash. Number 5, cheese and onion pie. Number 4, steak and ale pie. Number 3, shepherd's pie. Number 2, steak pie. Number 1, banoffee pie.
Oh,
no, I think okay, I'm going to put it out there. Terrible top 10, yeah. But don't care because it's still about pies.
Yeah. What's your favourite pie?
My favourite pie, I was asked this over the last week, beef and ale.
Oh, I like steak and kidney.
Fine.
Love kidney in a pie.
Fine, it's good. It's good. You asked that question so you could say yours? Just checking.
I wanted to know what yours was.
didn't sound like it.
Oh, no, I'm interested. Fassos, what's yours?
Go on.
Broccoli.
No, it would be like spinach and feta, that sort of area.
No,
not
the pie you can eat because you're plant-based. What's your favourite pie?
Shepherd's pie.
Exactly.
What's the one with lamb in it?
Yeah, shepherd's pie.
Shepherd's pie.
Oh, cottage pie.
Cottage pie, then.
No,
pie.
I think shepherd's is lamb, isn't it? Because it's
a cottage
shepherd.
Pie? What's cottage
beef.
Pie? Beef. Yeah. Is it? Okay. Mine would be beef and ale with a phyllo pastry or shortcrust pastry. You can go either way with that, can't you?
Also, I like the base. I don't like it when it's just a puff on the top. I like the underneath bit as well.
Do you know that Meghan Trainor song? It's all about the base.
Mm. Yeah.
Could you sing that for us a sec?
All about the base. Like the bass, no treble. That one.
Well, she says bass, it's great, isn't it? But when you sing it, you don't say it. Sing it like you say it. Like the Proclaimers. Oh, no, the Proclaimers are the most... the Proclaimers are the most accented sounding musical artists, aren't they? Because they do sound a bit like they speak. Mm. Because you get... Lulu, very transatlantic, considering she's Scottish.
Yeah.
It's true, though, isn't it? Yeah. Lots of people with different accents. You know, strident. Is that because they grow up with rock and roll, so they sing in a different accent too?
Don't know. Snow Patrol keep it quite tangy with the accent.
Tangy. Good choice of words. It's just a great word day today. It's a wild weather day, and with wild weather comes great words. That is absolutely awesome. I love that.
Thank you. I love that
so much. It's interesting, though, singing, isn't it? What it does to your brain, because a lot of people who have trouble, challenged by stammering, they don't stammer when they sing. Gareth Gates famously. Because it connects with a different part of your brain. So, are we interesting?
Yeah.
I think we might be the most interesting things on the planet.
And is it true that everybody can sing? I mean, obviously, I can't sing currently, but there's people who could say everybody can sing. Just come here and we'll teach you how to sing, and then you'll sing.
Singing teachers say that. Why do you think they say that?
Oh.
Because?
They want people to come and pay them for their services.
I'm not going to be so cynical as to say that out loud on the radio. No, of course, everybody can sing somehow. They will say, of course they can. I would imagine so. Who did the top 10 pies research? Why did they do it? Virgin Radio UK. We did it. It's our top 10 and it's not very good. By the way.
You didn't ask us.
I should have looked at that before I read the story out and said what I said about it, shouldn't I? And I don't normally go back to what the source of the story is. Oh, this is all very serendipitous. By the way, why weren't we surveyed? We are Virgin Radio. You know, it's not that far to carry a clipboard to come and ask us what we think.
We could do it on email.
Where is the survey? The nation's favourite pies have been revealed. I suppose it's good because, you know, if you do a survey that everybody sort of latches on, because already we've spent 4 or 5 minutes on it. What's great about that is that we didn't know who it's from, and so we can't now be accused of being partial towards our own surveys. But that's a good one. I'm not happy with banoffee pie at number one. I'm not happy with that at all. I'm not happy with pie and mash.
Uh-uh.
Top 10 British pies. That's not even an answer. It's our survey. We've got to be honest with each other here. Number 6, pie and mash. Top 10 British pies. That's not a British pie. It's a dish, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a combination. It's a collaboration. It's a composition. Pasty, number 7. It's a pasty. It's not a pie. Definition of a pie. Somebody look it up quick. Melton Mowbray, you can have that one. Meat and potato. I like, what's the one I have in Scotland? Is it a butter pie? I can't remember. It's ridiculous.
What? A butter pie?
I think. What's it? It's potatoes and onions. It's called a butter pie, though, isn't it? It's potatoes and onions. Lancashire butter pie. I thought there was one up north, further north.
Jane did a top five northern foods yesterday, and they were all basically brown, encased in brown, and fried. And she said, I know, but look, it's cold up north, all right?
Salt, oil and sugar, that's the thing, isn't it, about brown food?
Yeah.
It's got it all.
Delicious.
On the sauce, Heinz launches new creamy pasta sauce containing what?
Pasta?
Begins with V, ends in vodka.
Vodka?
Yeah. Heinz is adding some spirit to meal times by launching a creamy pasta sauce with a shot of vodka. Yeah? Kids being a bit too boisterous? Scientists at the food giant teamed up with drink experts at Absolut to create jars of tomato, basil, cheese and vodka. They took their inspiration from supermodel Gigi Hadid. Is that how you say it?
I think so.
Gigi Hadid. Now Heinz and Absolut are bringing their own version of the much-loved dish to the masses. Chefs say vodka unlocks the flavours. We're way ahead of you on this one. It may have taken over 150 years of tomato expertise to launch our first pasta sauce, but we're determined to innovate at the speed of social media trends. The result is absolutely delicious. The 350-gram jars, priced at £2.50, are expected to go on sale at Waitrose next month. I wonder if there's a legal limit, age limit, to buying it.
Oh, there must be.
Really? Because this...
There might not be any alcohol content in it.
Oh, wow. Can of worms.
Yeah.
No. Jar of pasta sauce. Ted Lasso takes his mental health message to the White House. Jason Sudeikis is used to spreading good vibes as the chipper fictional football coach, Ted Lasso. He gets his ragtag bunch of players pumped after a dismal first half. And ends the game victorious. Such is the Lasso effect and popularity of the award-winning comedy that Sudeikis and his co-stars found themselves at the White House, where they discussed the importance of mental health with President Joe Biden after they'd woken him up.
Did you know about the origins of Ted Lasso?
Ted Lasso, wasn't it a brake bumper or something somewhere?
So it wasn't supposed to be a sitcom. It was just some ads to advertise the World Cup to Americans to show them what it was about.
Yeah, that's
right. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, but that's how The Simpsons started.
Is it?
Yeah, The Simpsons were the brake bumpers for the Tracy Ullman show. And then they started getting bigger ratings than Tracy's show, which was, by the way, which already had massive ratings. But he said, what are those brake bumpers? They're called brake bumpers when they sort of wrap around the ad break. Ted Lasso, amazing. I watched two more episodes yesterday. I watched the episode where after the auction, the fundraising auction, where the ex of the new club owner turns up and completely upstages a very yellow behaviour. And after that, I watched the episode after that, which is where the new, the gorgeous, by the way, is there a better looking man than their Argentinian signing? Have you seen him? Oh, my God, he's so beautiful. Like the most beautiful person ever.
Football is life.
And he's like a brilliant footballer. And he's in to teach Jamie Tartt a lesson. If you haven't seen Ted Lasso, get it. It's you know, Noah wafted in and wafted out last night. Now, Noah is in a period of pre-mourning because he's just about to watch the last three episodes that are available ever, probably, of The American Office. And I'm like... Don't worry, you've got Ted Lasso to come. And he watched a bit that wasn't quite Lasso-esque enough, and it was the wrong 30 seconds for me to show him. Yeah. It's like, oh, no, he's doing it.
I've lost him.
And it's so office-y, isn't it? It's so office-y, I think, Ted Lasso. It's absolutely awesome. And then I watched the next episode, which is the one where they have to exorcise the demons of the rubdown room.
Yeah.
By all putting into the
big oil burner,
the brazier, and they're going to burn it all in the middle of the pit. Anyway, nobody's got a clue what I'm talking about. It's just the best ever. Ford are bringing back the iconic Capri with a major change, and this is excuse me. I always get a frog in my throat just before coffee at 7:20. It's always exactly the same time. Ford is bringing back the Capri, but the gas-guzzling coupe of old will get an eco-friendly overhaul because it's going to be an EV, and the revamped 1980s classic dubbed the working man's Porsche for its style. And affordability is due to go on sale next year. It's going to be 40 grand, not 16.4 seconds. 300 horsepower Capri, we'll have rear-wheel drive. Four headlights at the front. I can't wait for this because what Ford have done is, Ford, I don't know if you know this, but Ford, they're doing great business. Their share price is a bit icky, but then again, all share prices are, especially in North America. But they have this bunker in the middle of the desert in Arizona. And it's where they go to imagine. They have this sort of crack team of Imagineers. And they go there and they are like sort of the Ben and Jerry's. They're like the Elon Musks of Ford. And they're just left to do their own thing. And they don't really have a budget. And now and again, when they think they come up with something, they just ping it back to Ford headquarters and they either make it or they don't. And there's a lot of retro action going on. And this was led by the GT40 and then the Ford Mustang. And then they adopted the Mustang for things like your car, which is the
Mach-E.
The Mach-E, which is the Mustang SUV.
Yeah. The electric.
And they're now having a look. They're going, well, hang on a minute, what was really iconic? And it was the Ford Capri. Not so much in America, to be honest. This was a European here. But there's a picture of Harry Styles with his Ford Capri, original Ford Capri, 3-litre Ford Capri, because that was the top of the shop, the 3-litre Ford Capri. And I think I used to own that car.
That actual?
I think so, yeah. Because I did have one. And there are very few around of that spec in that colour with that combination, because he's got the vinyl black roof and he's got... I think that's the car I owned, because I've never seen another one. And I had it restored for a TV show that we then gave it away on the TV show. But the bloke who won it didn't want it. And so somebody else bought it. And he was a classic car guy who may well have sold classic cars in the end. He was a restorer. And I think he was the kind of guy... Styles. I was going to say Harry Redknapp. Because he was being mentioned in Ted Lasso last night because they were looking for a new manager. He said, Redknapp's been on the phone 3 times today. Anyway, he's the kind of guy that Harry Styles would have gone to buy a car.
I love a Ford Capri.
Sorry, I missed out the Ted Lasso at the White House chat. Here we go.
You know, we encourage everyone, and this is a big theme of the show, is like to check in with your neighbor, your coworker, your friends, your family, and ask how they're doing. And listen. Sincerely, you know, I mean, you all ask questions for a living, but you also listen for a living. So, you know, who am I preaching to? The choir, that is. Okay. While it's easier said than done, we also have to know that we shouldn't be afraid to ask for help ourselves. And that does take a lot, especially when it's something that has such a negative stigma to it, such as mental health. And it doesn't need to be that way. And if you can ask for that help from a professional, fantastic. If it needs to be a loved one, equally as good in a lot of ways, because sometimes you just need to let that pressure valve release.
It was good, but I would have preferred him to do it as Ted Lasso. He should have done that, because it would still have worked. It would have gone more viral. The ultimate TED talk. Ted Lasso talk. Why didn't he do it as Ted Lasso? Oh... Such a missed opportunity. Mm. Overwhelmed by the fact that he was in the White House.
I'm in the White House.
Because who did that? James Corden's character did that, didn't he? He did that for real, didn't he? To the England team, didn't he go?
Oh yeah, when
Smithy went into the England team. James Corden could have gone. You know, I play Smithy. You know, and Smithy would say this, Smithy would say that, which is basically what Jason did there. By the way, it's great what Jason did. Don't get me wrong. It's amazing that he spoke out about mental health at the White House in front of Sleepy Joe, who may have been awake for some of it. Who knows? But as Ted Lasso. So it would have landed. Yeah. It would have gone mad, wouldn't it? I nearly said mental. I didn't. But I just did. So Smithy went in to talk to the England team, didn't he?
It was a comic relief thing. I think it was a comic relief thing just before the World Cup.
Yeah.
And he gave the team talk as Smithy.
Yeah,
fantastic. And obviously the England players just loved it.
Yeah. Engineers have made a cheesecake with a 3D printer. Who doesn't want to hear more about that story?
Yes, please.
Actual cheesecake.
Actual edible cheesecake.
Yeah. Vassos says he's given up sugar for Lent. Correct?
Yep.
Okay.
How do you define sugar?
How do you define or how do you refine sugar?
Both. I'm not sure.
Go on.
You're going to hit me with a cheesecake that I had on Sunday thing.
No, I'm not. But, I had no idea about that.
I went out for a day with Emily, and we saw she's like the cheesecake queen. She has Cheesecake Thursdays. She and her friends, they mark cheesecakes out of 10. It's a thing, right? And so we went out of our Vietnamese food, and we thought, what is pudding? And then opposite, there was a Filipino bakery in Soho, and we thought, well, let's go in there.
Yes.
And then we bought a cheesecake, and obviously I had to break my no sugar thing for the cheesecake, and it was just the best thing ever.
So you don't give up sugar for Lent?
No, I give up chocolate for Lent. Right. I give up sugar generally in life.
Okay.
With the odd exception.
But doesn't this stem from you giving up chocolate for Lent? Doesn't it stem from when you had chocolate with sugar in it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but now you still give up chocolate for Lent even though it's not bad for you.
It's a family thing. And then we come back, like Mary will come back from school and saying, it was brownies for pudding at school today and I got it and it was right near my mouth before I remembered that we all give up flipping chocolate for Lent. I had to put it down and give it to my friend.
Have you seen the video of the older lady on who is trying to give up chocolate and adopt a healthier, greener diet? Have you seen that? So she has this massive bowl. It's huge. It's comedically huge bowl of lettuce leaves. Yeah. Right? Have you seen it?
No, but I like it already.
Oh, it's so funny. It's so funny, right? So there's this... it's the biggest bowl I've ever seen.
Yep.
It's this massive bowl. I don't know where they got it from. And it's full of lettuce leaves. There is a mountain of lettuce leaves, right? And so she takes the lettuce leaf with her left hand. She eats the lettuce leaf, right? And in her right hand, she has an unwrapped bar of chocolate.
Yep.
Okay. So for every lettuce leaf she eats, she smells the chocolate. So you know the Physical 100, which we raved about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's a new one. It's not the Physical 100. There's a new show. It's not the same, but apparently it's as crazy and as compelling. It's not out of Korea. It's out of Japan. And it's called Run for the Money. And Kedge has seen it. And we're going to watch the trail live on the air in a bit. And Kedge is going to tell us all about it. It sounds fantastic. All right, 3D printing. Paul in Billericay. He says, here we go. I have a daily multivitamin that is made by 3D printing. I love it. It's called Nourish Shed. You choose your vitamins and what flavour you want, and then it comes in the post. This is a cheesecake that has been 3D printed. It's on the news agenda via CNN. Engineers at Columbia University whipped up a 7-ingredient vegan cheesecake that was assembled and cooked entirely by a 3D printing machine. And in a new innovation, laser technology, according to a study published Tuesday in the journal NPJ Science of Food. Because 3D printers, they're a bit like Prime in a way. Because they come and they go news-wise, don't they?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they were going to be the future. You know, I know, you know, there was that thing about, you know, you can order wine glasses, they'll have them 3D printed. Or you can, if you've got a 3D printer, you can buy wine glasses online and they will send the algorithm through to your printer that will then print you your wine glasses that you pay somebody else for that isn't anywhere near your house. I don't understand. And that sort of came and it went. And Ferrari at Maranello at the headquarters, you can 3D print a car. So you can go in and you can order a bespoke car and you can literally press print and it will...
Including the tyres?
No, the body shell.
Okay.
And you press print and you stand there and this car comes out.
How long does it take though?
Not very long.
Oh.
I don't know precisely, but it begins to happen straight away. The point is, it's incredible. It is incredible, no matter which way you look at it. But obviously, it's kind of a bit quiet on the old. How do we get some more PR for the 3D printing world? I'm not. By the way, I know that it's 3D. You know, great things are being done, aren't they? So like hip replacements and things like that. You know, some amazing things, especially for our well-being and the well-being of our furry and feathery friends. I know that things are 3D printed that are really, really important. But I thought we were all going to have one in our living room. You know, that's what we all sort of thought, wasn't it, for a while?
Because we all have printers. We should upgrade to the 3D version.
Have you seen? I'll get back to 3D printing in a second. I know it's time for the headline. Have you witnessed recently, right, an office building anywhere, right, being emptied, decanted, because they're either going to knock it down or refurb it? Have you seen that recently happening anywhere? Because it happens a lot in London. And because I travel across London, I know you travel around London, Vassos, and you travel to London, Rachel, but I go right through London every day, don't I, from here to Baker Street. And I go different ways. So there's always a building being knocked down and something else being built in its place, or several. So I see a lot of these building clearances going on. And when they start to wheel out the photocopiers, it's like they're wheeling out the pyramids. To see a photocopy, they go, that's so much machinery for a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they were the future, weren't they? If you had a new photocopier in the office, you know, like a cool grey one with a bit of a digital screen as opposed to a big white one without a digital screen that clunked and sounded more like an MRI than anything else that you might find in the office. But now you see them and they go, where are you going to put that? And then they bring out another and another and another. You think, these were the biggest things. These were, has anything bigger ever been produced to create anything smaller? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You, what you get is you get a piece of a, usually A4, A3, because they could do them all. You know. By the way, anybody ever seen A3 being printed, reprinted?
No.
No, you haven't, have you?
Maybe like for an architect's firm.
Maybe, but have you ever seen it?
No.
No. So you have this massive machine and all you get at the end of it is a piece of A4 paper with something printed. What went on? Is there somebody in there? Is that why they were so big? Could they not figure out the technology? Was it actually somebody in there typing it out very quickly?
And we still haven't done the pyramids, speaking of.
No, I know. We'll always have the pyramids, Vassos. When Vassos and I do our pyramid chat, you know that's the last show. Because we know how they were made. Just saying. Hashtag just saying. So, no, maybe the people in charge of the 3D printer PR said, look, you got to do a chocolate cake. Then people re-engage with this. Or cheesecake. Especially in the middle of Lent, when everybody's craving a bit of sugar. Anyway, we have engaged in it, and it's quite nice. Peaky Blinders creator launches construction of new film and TV studio by order of the Peaky Blinders creator Stephen Knight. He's been on the show. He's amazing. Construction has begun on his new multi-million pound TV and film studio in Birmingham. The studio is designed to put the city on the media map, create over 700 jobs and £30 million to the local economy, and house Knight's new Scar Music BBC drama This Town, as well as the Peaky Blinders film. Is this going to be... Because they talked about the Peaky Blinders land, didn't they,
yeah,
a couple of weeks ago. Do you think this is where it's going to be?
I think it sounds like it, doesn't it?
Well, they were talking about a theme park, which would need its own sort of acreage, I suppose, unless it was a studio's tour, which is different. I don't know. What do you think? Because you've got your...
I don't know.
What is it called? Like, when you look for locations, what is the phrase?
Location scout.
Location scout. You're scouting currently. You are. That's so funny. Currently, the Taskmaster Massive are scouting for locations for the Taskmaster theme park. Who doesn't want to go? Look, it worked for Peppa Pig.
Yeah, well, Peppa can do it.
Just off the M27 or wherever it is. Yeah. You know, we all go there. Poulton Park, you've been there. You lived there for a while, didn't you?
I did. We spent many happy summers there.
Oh, Peppa.
Mary did a promotional video for them.
Yes, she did.
Well, was she paid?
Well, sort of.
Well, I was.
You weren't paid. You got a freebie, didn't you? Or something. Yeah. Like a contra deal. Something like that, wasn't it? Yeah, so how's it going, by the way? Have you found the right valley yet?
No.
What do you need? You need a valley. You need plenty. See, here's the deal. My friend, you know him, Super Ian. He owns Tewton Glen and all these other kind of amazing places. So he says it's all about the chimney pots for him. So you need somewhere that has what you want, but is surrounded by enough chimney pots, because even though you want it to be a destination location, or sort of business, you still need the local heat to be around for things like afternoon teas and Sunday dinners to keep the catering going. So we're trying to do a deal at the moment for a dine-in disco with a certain hotel, you know, and we've sort of done a deal on all the rooms. And then they came back to us and said, look, obviously we need to gonna add something for the catering, right? And then, so one could be forgiven for saying, for reacting as opposed to responding, hang on a minute, we're going to take the whole hotel and we want all the rooms at retail. We don't want a discount. We're not even asking for a discount. You've got a guaranteed full house that weekend. Yeah, but of course, a lot of people who would come usually would spend some money at the bar there, and they would book dinner there. Breakfast is included, but they might book lunch there or an afternoon tea, which is great business for hotels. And afternoon teas are very popular, aren't they? With a glass of Prosecco or whatever it is. But our gang will be going to the dine-in disco where we'll be providing the catering. So the hotel's going to miss out on all that. So they've got to factor all that in, you know. Can't remember why I was talking about this. Where are we going with this?
Rachel looking for a valley.
Yeah, I know. There's a bit in the middle. I don't know how we got to this bit.
Theme park?
No, I can't. I know it's all like
you were skiting hotel locations. I know then you asked me how we were going skiting.
Peaky Blinders.
No, forget it. It's all good. Text in, what was that about? 87222. Text in, what is our show currently about? Because the host can't remember. Anyway, Kedge is here. Kedge is here to save the day. So we talked about the physical 100, and some of you watched it. I don't know how many of you watched it. With some people, let us know that they're watching the physical 100. You can still watch it. It's on Netflix if you haven't seen it. It is awesome. I don't get why the whole world hasn't been talking about it. But Kedge and I, we loved it, didn't we?
Yeah, I loved it.
Okay, my wife, Tash, loved it. Some other people that I know and sort of ally with in my taste absolutely ate it up. It was the best of human beings on telly in a silly game show. Wasn't it? That's what
yeah.
it was.
And what you said about the editing as well. Yeah. It was always positive editing, wasn't it? Which I think that was game-changing for telly.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like a comedian, because you can have a potty mouth as a comedian, but once you've said certain words, then you have to say more extreme words to have the same effect, you know. And it's, in a way, it's like telling jokes around a dinner party, you know. So if you're having a lovely dinner party with great conversation and somebody chooses to tell a joke, you know, that you got to think about that, because... Basically, you're saying, now, everybody listen to me. This is a joke. Yeah, well, before that, the spontaneous conversation, which can be much funnier anyway and is inclusive of everyone. And then somebody tells a joke and it might be really funny because they're an amazing joke teller. But then somebody needs to tell another joke and they have to tell it as well. And it's got to be half as long because now we're in the joke world. And it's got to be twice as funny to be as funny and as entertaining. And where do you go from there? And the thing about comedians is, you know, and all comics will say this. Well, comics that I know will say this. The genius of Jerry Seinfeld is that he's a clean comic. So he's clean and he is still the funniest comedian. He's the best comedian on the planet and he's completely clean. And that is an art form in itself. And the thing about the Physical 100 is, of course, they could have gone against each other. You know, they were rivals, but they were nothing but supportive of each other. And in the end, somebody did win, but everybody won. And if you're watching it, you were so uplifted by it, weren't you?
Yeah, uplifted. And you didn't really care who won. Do you know what I mean? You just wanted them all to do really well. And
well, so, yeah. I tried to tell Vassos that I didn't care who won, because he said, oh, you must have had a favourite. Now, you watched it, I watched it. Did you have a favourite?
I didn't have a favourite.
I didn't have a favourite either. And he went, oh, come on, you must have done.
Mary and I are watching it. We've got favourites.
Okay, Mary's 8. All right, so what's the new show we're going to watch?
It's called Run for the Money. It just came up as a suggestion.
It's just great.
And it's wild.
I love the, you know, non-sort of European shows go for the sort of one-stop shop sell, don't they? You know, yeah. it's like our friend Mark Wogan, who has his pizza place. You know, do one thing well. Home slice. It's slices of pizza. It's done brilliantly. These are single ideas, just magnified, aren't they? So this is Run for the Money. Basically, 29 well-known people from Japan. Everybody in Japan recognizes these people. Run for money around various locations.
It's like a little village.
It's like a theme park kind of village again.
Yeah, I think it looks like
by
a theme park.
Taskmaster looking for a Japanese. Venue. This is the place.
Okay.
Because you can downtime it, can't you? You know, it's like when Strictly weren't using their sound studio, somebody else used it. It reduced the cost of things. You know, it's very sort of economically sound. And so they're running around this theme park. 29 of 29 Japanese celebs.
Correct.
And what happens next?
So they just and this is very quick. Unlike the Physical 100, where it took a long time to get into it. This is, you're straight into the show. So literally, they just told, right, you're running.
Too long for some people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've got the counter, 60 seconds. So they've got, right, here you go. You've got to start running. Every second the money goes up, they have to try and last as long as they can. And they've got 30 silently dressed sort of hunters after them. And they're just, oh, it's brilliant. And they just got to run and they've got to keep running.
It's so good, man. Have you seen the trail?
No.
You're supposed to be watching it now.
Let's put the trail on.
No, it's too late now because we've talked about it. You're supposed to be watching it whilst. Remember what we said before? Do you remember?
Yes.
Right, so...
But on Kedge's computer, we don't have the password.
I've got the password, but I thought we were talking
Moment's
about
gone.
Valleys.
Anyway, the listeners have texted, thank you, Kedge, you're awesome.
Thank you.
Watch the trailer, it's brilliant. It makes you want to watch the show. Loads of people are texting in on what we were talking about. It was chimney pots.
Oh, yes.
And none of us can remember. Yeah.
Chimney pots.
Thank you, Kedge. You're awesome. Bye, Kedge.
Bye, Kedge.
He's the best. He's so busy all the time. Do you know how old he is?
I know, he is ridiculous. He is
ridiculous.
Know what
we
should
do?
People look like 5 years younger than they are. He's like 15.
I would say he looks half his age. Mm. Honestly, I would say he looks half his age.
Yeah, I think he looks about a third of his age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
He could definitely get ID'd.
Also, he's. I know Ked's quite well. I don't know him very well. I know him probably a bit better than you know him, I would imagine.
It's not a competition.
No, I'm just trying to say. I want to know if you know him better than I do, because I'm about to say something about him.
We have football bands together.
By the way, it wasn't a competition, Vassos. It was a conversation. But you were thinking, is this a competition?
Well, but you did the comparison. Hey, Kedge, who do you know better?
No, no, it wasn't who do you know better. It's who you don't even listen.
He doesn't want to say.
Who knows you better?
Same, the same.
Who do you think you know? It's even a... Oh.
We have football bants quite a lot and on WhatsApp.
Oh, do you? Okay, in that case, you may know him better than I do. But like you say, it's not a competition.
Exactly.
Thank you for that whole minute of nonsense. I can't remember what I was saying. Forget it. Doesn't matter. hurtling towards Easter, many bank holidays. You could sort of lose count of the bank holidays coming up because you've got your Good Friday, you've got your Easter Monday, and that's in April this year. And Easter is the most changeable of all feasts, literally, isn't it? And then you have three bank holidays in May, don't you?
I know. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. And one of them is Motorhead Day.
Yeah, the 8th of May. The 8th of May.
See, who says? No, there are some people that can't sing.
Exactly. Shall I try again?
What?
Do you want me to try again? Was that awful?
Oh, no, it's fine. I thought it was fine.
We can do better than fine, though.
I don't think you can, but off you go. The Ace of Spades. The Ace of Spades. The Ace of Spades. That's your guide track.
Okay. The 8th of May. The 8th of May.
What's all this?
The 8th of May. I'm trying to get in character. I'm getting in character.
You're still cold from the Serpentine. That's the thing. You know, open water swimming, cold showering, supposed to wake you up in the morning. It clearly does. But then, because it's so cold, what Vassos does in the morning, I have like a two-minute cold shower. I do it every day. There is not a day goes by when I don't have a two-minute cold shower. Weekends, Christmas Day, doesn't matter. I love it. I actually love it. I really enjoy it now. Really, I'm over the... People said to me, you'll never get used to it. That's the amazing, challenging thing about it. You never get used to it. You do. But I would imagine you don't get used to the Serpentine. But he spends the next 3.5 hours just trying to warm up.
I come here for a warm.
That's the thing.
That's why
his vibration is so strange. Yeah, by the way, you picked the wrong studio to get warm in.
Yes, exactly.
The 8th of May. Yeah, no, the kids are so excited, aren't they? Because they've got most kids have got 2 weeks for Easter, I think. So my kids, we have 2 weeks for Easter. My grandchildren have 2 weeks for Easter. They have one overlapping week because they're going a week later. So the second week of my kids' holidays is the first week of my grandkids' holidays, which still means we have a chance to get together.
That's lovely.
And it's the same week that the happy pair are in town. Stephen and David. Stephen and David. David, come on, Stephen. Let's make some more kombucha. Oh, come on, Stephen. We made like 8 gallons. It's only 8 o'clock. Oh, come on, let's make some more kombucha. Come on, let's do it. And they're bringing their dad over and their other brother. I didn't know there was another brother. Pair brother.
And they're bringing a doctor. They sent me a little WhatsApp
message.
No,
he's already here.
Is he?
Zach Bush is already here. He's here this week and they're here on the 4th to the 6th of April. I think they're coming on the show. I'm very excited. But Zach Bush is around. I don't know. It is good though, isn't it? Mm. It is. I love the happy pair. They're going to be all over Carfest this year, which is great. 10 coolest things that have been printed. Here we go from 10 down to 1. Edible printings. In 2015, 3D Systems announced the ChefJet Pro 3D, a 3D printing device that was able to 3D print sweets and candy treats. Number 9, bioprinting, replacing body parts, which I alluded to before. Number 8, 3D printed pizza. I mean, the thing is, what's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah, but these are probably stepping stones to something that really is the point. So, I'm not going to say that too loudly. Number 7, personalised 3D printed medication. Okay, that's already good. We've already mentioned that today. Number 6, unique 3D printed prosthetics. Very important.
Yes.
Of course. Of course, very, very important. Number 5, the world's first 3D printed ship propeller. That's quite nice, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Propellers are good anyway. People have them on their walls, don't they? People have propellers on their walls, and I can understand why.
It's the angle of the blades, isn't it? Because it's very carefully worked out by clever people.
Very, very clever. Number 4, the XEV yo-yo car. There's the car there, 3D printed.
It looks like a little smart car.
It does look exactly like a little smart car. Number 3, the 3D printed guitar. It's pretty cool. Red, white and blue.
Yes.
Quite Britsy. Nice. Number 2, the world's longest 3D printed bridge. Number 1, the two-level villa. An actual house. And it's like a chateau-esque kind of French, sort of Britannic villa. That's a house. Somebody lives in that and it was printed by a 3D. How big was the printer?
Yeah. I was wondering what's going to beat a two-tier bridge. But a house pretty much does it.
Yeah. A Chinese company, Hosang Tengda, managed to build a two-story villa in just 45 days. They developed dedicated hardware, but also developed an innovative technique completing 3D printing. The thing about this is, though, it is completely usurped by the houses that unfold in front of you.
I know, they are extraordinary.
Oh, seriously, jump onto Insta Now or YouTube, and I don't know what you'd search. You'd search unfolding houses or self-erecting houses. They arrive, they're not on a trailer, they are the trailer. You press a button, they unfold within 10 minutes. It's an actual house.
Furnished house.
Furnished. Ridiculous, happening now. This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Yeah. We've just got far too clever for our own good.
We've peaked, yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Now on to our guest. Pass us over to you.
Our next guest makes sure Vogue is on Vogue. People queue for GQ and get hired at Wired. He's the boss of Condé Nast, whose book The Imagination Muscle is out now. So amid the hustle and bustle, let's train that muscle. We feel the need. The need for Albert Reid.
Good morning, Albert.
Good morning. So nice to be here. You've got crisps all over my book,
I know.
Way.
I can only apologise.
Brush them off very
Thankfully,
carefully.
There are a few copies. Albert, yes. Congratulations. What a great book.
Thank you.
You're a busy man. You don't really have time to do this. What moved you to writing this book so we can all benefit by reading it?
Well, I work in the business of ideas. Condé Nast is a company that thrives on ideas, and we've got to keep ideas coming. And if you sell something, you've got to regard the supply. So if you're selling bananas, you've got to know where the bananas come from. So with us, we need to know where the ideas are coming from. And so what struck me really about ideas and the imagination is we see it as something that is a fixed quantity, something that's bestowed on us from above. You know, it's like the Latin word inspirare, inspiration. We're breathed on by the gods. And what my line in this book is actually the imagination is something you can work at. You know, we pay attention to our physical health by going to the gym and going running. We pay attention to our emotional well-being, but we don't really pay attention to our imaginative health. And that's what this book is doing. It's saying you can be more imaginative, and here are some ideas of how you can do it.
Now, that for me is exceptionally interesting because, you know, the world I live in, I am sent to the imagination gym every day and I love it. And it is a muscle that you can flex and you can improve and you get match fit. And if I'm off for 4 weeks in the summer, I come back and I'm a little less, palpably a little less imaginative. Tell us about, for people who don't, aren't fortunate enough to do this anyway as part of, or be challenged by this and have to come up with ideas every day. Tell us about the various imagination exercises and gym you can recommend.
Well, the obvious ones that we all know about are having ideas in the shower. So someone like Aaron Sorkin, who writes The West Wing, he has five showers a day because it keeps his mind going. It loosens the mind. It has this kind of loosening quality, having a shower. Going for a long walk, something invented by the Romantic poets. They realise that if you walk, you have ideas.
You say that's the best place to have ideas,
that's
or imagination.
That's one of the many places to have ideas.
Okay.
But there are other areas too, which I write about in The Imagination Muscle, that Vladimir Nabokov, the writer, used to have his ideas for novels in a car after a long journey. So what I sometimes do at the end of a long journey is I sit in the car and you get this funny feeling of release of ideas. And it's the same when you leave parties. When you come out of a party on your own, walking down a cold street, your mind floods with ideas. And this is something that Diderot, the Enlightenment writer, realised with the l'esprit de l'escalier, the spirit of the staircase, when you leave a party and you're stumped for that clever riposte and you go down the stairs and you go, I thought of that earlier.
Yeah.
So they're all, and then there's another idea, story.
Party regret.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's another story I love, which is Schiller, the German writer, who used to keep a drawer full of rotten apples in his study. So he'd have this smell of rotten apples, this gas called ethylene that comes out from rotten apples when as they're decomposing, inspired him to write. And I tried this when I was writing my book. I went to Sainsbury's and bought a bag of rotten apples. And after about 6 weeks, I breathed in. And actually, it was disgusting.
You talk about it in the book. I found that really interesting. So it didn't
work for me. But, you know, there are ideas.
You took a good couple of sniffs though, didn't you?
I did, yeah. And I had to go open the window and I was nearly sick. But it turns out also the Delphic Oracle, you know, back in ancient Greece, they now think that there was this ethylene gas was naturally emitting through the geological formations. So, and that's why she went into this trance-like ability to do prophecies.
Yeah.
So There are all sorts of interesting ideas about how we imagine.
Talk about some of the sort of superstars, the rock stars of Imagineering. Let's talk about Da Vinci, first of all, Picasso, Archimedes. Yeah. Off you go.
Yeah, well, Picasso is interesting because one of the things I talk about in the book is originality. And we think of Picasso as being this great original artist. And his famous painting, Les Demoiselles d'Avignon, was set the course of modern art in the 20th century. But actually what he did very cleverly is he picked ideas from artists like El Greco and Cézanne, and then he went to this museum of African artefacts, and he combined ideas in a new way. And really one of the themes of the imagination muscle is how you widen your imaginative palette and how you draw ideas in. The other person I talk about is Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda. What his genius for me is not just that he composed Hamilton and put Hamilton on stage, but he had this combination of ideas from different sources. He knew about, you know, Eminem and Tupac Shakur and the rap and the hip hop, but he also knew about the conventions of musical theatre from Andrew Lloyd Webber's Jesus Christ Superstar, and he had read this big, thick biography of a relatively obscure founding father. Yeah. So you had this mixture of ideas, and really, I think the lesson from this and from Picasso is draw your sources from all sorts of different places and bring them together and read what no one else is reading, because that will make your mind an original mind, a fresh mind, and it'll keep you stimulated and keep you happy and keep you alive.
Yeah, and I suppose a lot of people take... Well, I was saying before you arrived on the radio about the fact people say, oh, you're so creative, this, and I'm not. I'm quite a plus and minus guy, but you talk about, you know, whether it's Lin-Manuel Miranda or it's Picasso or it's Da Vinci. And, you know, you don't have to be a laissez-faire sort of hippie chic sort of hermit to be imaginative. And some of the best ever Imagineers are creative / scientists, aren't they? And Da Vinci, there's no better example of that than Da Vinci. And you talk about Lin-Manuel Miranda there and about the fact that he's a student of detail. And then you take all the detail, all the sort of tools in your toolkit, or the weapons in your armory, or the bullets in the magazines, and you go, right, what can I do with these? And it's actually a lot easier than some people think, as long as you do the groundwork.
Completely. And I think the problem with modern life is we all get into our trenches. We all have our fields of expertise, and social media drives us as well. We all become very, very good at one very, very small thing. And what was interesting about in history is people like Da Vinci being the prime example, is people saw across these trenches. And even in the 19th century, poets also were interested in science, and scientists were also interested in the arts. So you had people like Alexander Fleming, who discovered penicillin, and he won the Nobel Prize. He was also an artist, and he was a member of the Chelsea Arts Club. He wasn't a very good artist, but there's also Richard Feynman, the particle physicist in 1965, winning the Nobel Prize. There's a tendency for Nobel Prize winners in science to have a side interest in the arts. And I find that very, very interesting, that scientists who have this other part of their brain being developed and being worked on are better scientists as a result of that. And I find that really fascinating. And they also are better at explaining science and talking about science, and they just bring a different perspective to science. And I think that's the lesson we all have to learn, is we should all widen our perspectives. Read things that we wouldn't necessarily normally read. Read differently. Don't read one book and then another book.
Yeah, yeah.
Read different books at the same time. So there are lots of ideas from history which I think need to be revived and brought to the fore.
Yeah, and Feynman talks, and his fellow quantum physicists, they talk about the elegance of formulae, don't they?
Yes, exactly. You know, there's a beauty in
there's maths. A beauty in it, yeah. You know, and that's the same thing, because a lot of a lot of melodies in music, they're mathematical equations. You know, you go half down the scale, and that note fits the one that was double, and you know, there's the crotchets and the quarters, and a fretboard on a guitar or a keyboard, you know, on a piano or on some kind of other percussive instrument, you know, it's all numbers. It's all that there are patterns to it. There are shapes to it, you know, and with that, there's a harmony to it and there's a smoothness to it. And it's that that makes us feel at ease, you know, and if we can't create it, at least we can appreciate the created. If you can talk a little bit more about Da Vinci, who I'm fascinated by, about, you know, he was so fascinated, wasn't he, by the anatomy of things that he was trying to draw, that he often dissected cadavers, up to 30 in his lifetime?
Yes, he did, and he did it while he was painting. So while he was painting the Mona Lisa, he would paint it during the day, and then at night, he would go to this mortuary in Florence, and he'd dissect cadavers, and he would study very, very closely the way a smile works and the way that the curve of a nostril is delineated. So he took his scientific learnings and really took art to the next level by really understanding the muscular makeup of the face.
And that's why, one of the theories is that's why this the Mona Lisa smiles is so alluring.
Yes, exactly.
And mystifying and mystical.
Yes, he brought a clinical scientist's eye to the artist's
almost
craft.
Almost beneath the skin, almost.
Exactly, yes. And he would do it with birds and with... He'd study the swirls of water and the cascades of hair, and he was fascinated by form and shape, and he saw the world and the human being being the same thing, you know, the water being the blood, the flow, and the, you know, the rocks, the oceans being our bodies and part of our bodies. So he was a deeply fascinating man, and really what he was a very, very brilliant at it was observing. He was the ultimate observer, and he would observe things which seemed to have no particular relevance. Like he would study the tongue of a woodpecker, and this for him was just deeply interesting in itself. He didn't see any, you know, he just did it because it was fascinating.
How did he have? I mean, there was no Netflix then, I suppose.
Yeah, that was one issue. Yeah.
Is it also true that he wrote left-handed and in reverse to protect his ideas?
He did.
How do you form that skill?
Well, he was a very, very brilliant man. And he did it partly because some of the ideas were quite radical. Like the sun does not move. You know, these were ideas which
were... And he
was
way ahead
of Galileo and all these people. Yeah. And so he was some of his ideas were radical. And he was... But also you get what I love about his what you could call a commonplace book, where you're noting down observations, but he's also got the shopping list and the little doodles in the margin. Yeah. So you see his mind working in all these different ways, you know, the trivial, the serious, the obscure, the relevant. He's designing canals for Milan one moment, then he's studying the effect of light on trees the next. So there's this extraordinary, you know, the Renaissance mind is
and
his.
He's allowed himself access to all his powers via no distractions, hasn't he? Because you get the sense of there's like sort of 10 of him in his own orchestra, helping him to do all these things. So, for example, his side notes are like the most profound prose in the world. The sketches that accompany these, which are effectively his doodles, are like masterpieces.
Yeah, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yes. It is,
and it's not fair.
Yes, and as I said in the imagination muscle, one could have equally two men living at the same time: Da Vinci, the artist, and Da Vinci, the scientist, and they could both be equally brilliant and men we would still revere for the science and for the art as two. Yeah. So, but they have to be the same person, and this was
and
the miracle.
And there's probably a poet in there as well.
Yes, absolutely. There's everything in there.
So it doesn't mean that these folks don't fall out with each other, the great Imagineers. So W.H. Auden once said of Wordsworth, poetry never changed anything. Is that right?
Yes, he did, yes.
And of course, in the end...
And Wordsworth changed the world in the sense that he created he started the idea of national parks.
Yep.
So the Lake District, as we know it today, is really a creation of Wordsworth's.
And that's been transported as an idea all across the world.
Yes, and the national parks in the US really originate from Wordsworth's poetry, which is I find a fascinating idea.
This book is fascinating.
Thank you.
Was it a heavy, not a heavy burden, but was it, there are a lot of heavy lifting in writing it?
There was a certain amount of heavy lifting, but it was a joy to do, and I did it over a protracted period of time, and as I did it, I discovered more and more things, and you know, there are so many other things that we could touch on in this book that I loved writing about, and the whole notion of originality, and you know, the idea that Star Wars, we think of Star Wars as being this most original film, and actually C-3PO and R2-D2 are based on these two Japanese peasants in this film by Kurosawa, and Lucas took the whole idea of that and then saving a princess and fighting an evil empire.
It's a classic double act.
And it's a classic double act. The tall one complains more than the small one.
It's the odd couple.
It's the odd couple, yes.
It's Statler and Waldorf. It's Laurel and Hardy.
So
I think the idea that
we're embarking on a creative project, we have to be wholly original is a misguided one. We need to find something to drape our tender idea on, and then over time we can move away from the original crutch.
Yeah, and cogitate on it, and you know, give the power of holding a thought. Again, people become too impatient when it comes to imagination if they haven't dealt in it. You know, you can sit on something for a long time, you know, as long as it's there. Bertrand Russell said, didn't he, you know, you feed something into the subconscious. You have to feed it in with passion. You can't be lazy. Mm. You know, you input it, and as long as you input it properly with commitment, passion, sincerity, authenticity, and some kind of depth of feeling, it will begin to be sorted out for you by the brilliance that you don't realise you have.
Yes, and the subconscious is another very, very important part of the imagination, and how we allow the subconscious to do the imagination's work. And I think a lot of what we deem as the spaces in our lives when we have ideas is when we find that moment in the day, or, you know, I find the waking moment, the first hour of the day, before you listen to the news, before you check your emails, that's when you have the ideas, because you're still half in touch with your unconscious. You're half, the dreams are still there a little bit, so you're just coming out of that phase, and there's this fertile territory between sleep and wakefulness.
And it does work if you have a studio of sorts. You do have a different brain when you enter the arch of whatever your studio is, whether it's your laptop, whether it's your car, if you're a professional driver. You have a different brain that is only accessible when you are present in that environment.
Completely, yes. I completely agree with that. And I think there are all these moments which are very precious. And I think what I'm really saying in the imagination muscle is we need to be more attentive to these moments. We need to realize, work out when they're happening in our day. And, you know, each person's going to be slightly different. Yeah. But I've through writing this book, I've discovered a lot about myself and how I imagine and where my ideas come from and how to have more of them.
Yeah, and it's fun, isn't it? It's a real kick.
It's great fun, and it's more than fun. It's all the research shows that if you occupy an imaginative life, if you're creative, you're a happier person.
Yeah.
And all the and I think one of the problems with society today is we delegate the imaginative activity to the experts, and we become consumers. In societies of old, everyone would participate in imaginative activity, whether it's dancing or singing, and we've kind of lost that, and we become passive consumers of Netflix, of TV, of all sorts of media. And really, to get back that individual imaginative muscle is part of what makes you happy, and it's part of what makes you alive.
I'm fascinated by words, and some words that are just one letter away from almost the opposite, like life and lie, just missing the F, the lie, and I like play and pay because, we are some addicted to pay where we used to be addicted to play, and we need to play more.
Yes, we do. We need to have more space in our lives for reflection. I talk also about this idea of the spaces in between, that we iron out the spaces in between, the slow cooking versus the instant delivery on a phone.
Who's your favourite Imagineer?
I think Da Vinci's up there.
I think so.
The woman Jane Jacobs, I don't know if you've read the bit about Cities.
Yeah.
I think she's a wonderful character. She's somebody I didn't know so much about before when I started writing the book. She's this great pioneer of how we should live in cities and how you build cities for ideas. And that is a subject which I think is
what
very
about
relevant.
The difference between thinkers and imagineers?
Well, I think they're part of the same thing. I think imagining, the language that we have with imagination and creativity and thinking, all these words kind of blend into each other.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not clearly defined in relation to each other. But I think thinking in terms of problem solving, and when it comes to a business, a lot of what you're doing is problem solving and execution and getting things done efficiently and doing things cheaply and profitably. That requires an imaginative mindset.
Yeah.
The Japanese have this expression kaizen, which is continuous improvement, always making things better.
Oh, I like that a lot.
And that comes down to imagination. And imagination doesn't have to be the big grand idea. It can be the small idea on the factory floor where you just make things that little bit better.
Yeah, I love that.
And in a company like mine, everybody should be imagining and thinking about how to do their jobs
better. Yeah, and it's not about, if you say, we need to solve this problem, it's too much pressure, man. We need to imagine a better way of doing this, imagining rather than solving.
Exactly.
And all the great sort of solvers of our time, made up or otherwise, they basically were also, Einstein, he says, what does he say about imagination is more important than knowledge. And if it comes from him, we'll take it, won't we?
Yes, completely. Yeah, and he solved problems by playing the violin.
Oh, he did indeed. Because it's called the muse, isn't it, sometimes, but for me, it's exercise and it's meditation, it's cold and hot therapy and things like that.
Exactly.
And it's when I'm most peaceful, which other people, again, and I don't mean to be patronising, who don't deal in imagination as much as we are fortunate enough to have to, I suppose. It's when you're at your quietest that all the most exciting things happen.
Yes, exactly.
Because there's space there for them to.
It's when you feel most alive.
Your last chapter is about the future.
Yes.
Imagining the future. We've got a minute left. Give us a minute on.
Well, the future's changing as we speak. The rise of ChatGPT.
Amazing.
Well, what are we on to? Four is amazing, and I think it has all sorts of implications for the imagination, good and bad. I think it'll do some of the imagining for us, which I think is bad because music will be composed by a machine, and I think that's not a good thing. We don't want to go in the way of Hollywood sequels, and at the same time, these new tools are coming up where you can imagine a video game and AI can help you build it very quickly. So it's, there are good and bad things about the future, but I think the imagination is what defines us, what's going to save us.
What do you imagine you're going to get up to for the rest of today?
Rest of today, well, I'm going to the office.
How many? What are the titles you oversee?
Well, we've got Vogue, GQ, Vanity Fair, Tatler, Wired, World of Interiors, House and Garden.
You're the boss.
I'm one of the bosses.
You're one of the bosses. Okay. Did the other bosses and your workforce know you've snuck onto our show this morning?
They're listening as we peek.
Are they? Yeah. Great. Yeah. As we speak and as we peek. Well, Albert, it's great to meet you.
Well, thank you, Chris.
Congratulations. Great book. The Imagination Muscle. Beautiful, moving, profoundly imaginative in itself, as entertaining as it is relevant and practical, from the one, the only, Alain de Botton. No less. Great, where good ideas come from and how to have more of them. Vassos, have you read this?
I have, yeah.
Really?
I did, yeah.
Sure?
I very much enjoyed going into the... Was it Turner's Snowstorm? You were talking about focus.
Yes.
And what happened with that? I know, probably haven't got time for it, but just very, very briefly.
Well, that's about observation. That's about why before you imagine, you've got to observe. And this goes back to Lin-Manuel Miranda. You've got to see things. You've got to really pay attention to the world around you. That's how ideas come to you.
All right. Okay. Well, great to see you. See you tomorrow. Have a lovely Wednesday, everybody. See you Thursday. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.